Good evening and welcome to episode 16 of the Borussia Dortmund London Fan Club podcast. Wow, episode 16. Time flies when you're having fun. And definitely today is going to be a lot of fun because we have an extremely accomplished football player with us who played for the Norwegian national team 63 times and is well known to Borussia fans for having played with BVB between 2003 and 2005. But he also had great success in Denmark and Holland, and also in his home country of Holland, of Norway, and has collected titles and cups like very few players we've had on our podcast before. So it's going to be a real pleasure to hear some of the cool stories. And he's currently a coach also in his home country, and he's had a very interesting coaching career as well so far. So I have the pleasure this evening of welcoming on the Borussia Dortmund podcast, Mr. André Berg-Dolmo. Good evening, André.
Hello, good evening. Nice to be with you.
Absolutely great, André. And before we get into the questions, and I would like to just find out a bit about how your day has been, what you've been doing. And also, I would love to pass on the regards from your friend Niklas Jensen, who has been a guest on our show quite recently.
Yeah, Niklas is a good friend and a very nice nice guy. The days are as I hoped when I was a young guy to doing football, and I had a good career, and I continued to doing that after I stopped playing. So now I'm a coach. I'm a pro licensed football coach from UEFA. And at this moment, everything except my wife, of course, it's about football and my team under 19 in a Norwegian club called Sarpsborg 08. So it's a bit a strange year, but still we're doing great.
Yeah, Sarpsborg 08. Yes, sir. I noticed that, and you're the under-19 coach there, right? And it must be pretty cool to be able to share your experience from playing to now being a coach. And indeed, you've been assistant coach in Kongsvinger, or were you the first team coach in Kongsvinger? Please correct me if I don't pronounce it.
Yeah, first team coach in Kongsvinger.
Who is a first division team, so Norwegian second tier, basically.
Yeah.
So what's it like working with the under-19s? I guess really you get to see a lot of very young, talented players, and you get to help them to finish off their preparation for their skills in terms of, you know, moving into the top of football, really.
Yeah. The funny thing to play with or to coach young players is that we have a development department and we have teams from we are starting to scout them when they are around 12 amongst the clubs in the area, and then we bring them in basically when they are 14, 15. Not as other big clubs in Europe, but still we can see were very early if they really, really want to be a really good football player. It's not enough to have a good coach. Everything depends on how the players are really want it. It has to come from their heart, all those things. But the really thing for me is when you see 15-year-old kids who are almost the same, and then the next year one of them are so much better, but the year after the other one has gone through again. So it's to find out all the things they really, really need to know and how they can develop. And we are just a sort of a brick you can use to get better. It's because direct learning, it's not available anywhere. So we just there to put everything on the right spot so they can take learning. And it's nothing else that pleases me more to see young players who are struggling in February and he is so, So up there in August, so just a few months with these young kids are incredible. So
yeah,
it's nice.
It's really great. What an amazing experience. And I also played football from the age of 5 till 30. And I have to say, those are the best moments for my life, going training and playing the weekend matches on Sunday mornings. And absolutely great. But I have to say that at 30, my body just said, it's enough now.
Yeah, it's that with all the players. And but also, I think it's very nice to see how they say breaking the code when you have some themes or you have some issues to tell the young players, and yeah, they just look at you and they don't understand nothing. It goes week, yeah, it goes 2 weeks, it goes 2 months, and then when you see those same kids breaking those small codes and you see how they just grow as a football player, that's even better to win the a game in the first division in Norway or the cup final or whatever, to see the happiness of making to break those codes. And that's what really inspires me every day.
Absolutely. So cracking it, basically understanding what's needed of them and basically being able to integrate it into their game, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Right. And one player who I can't help I would like to give a little bit of background about yourself, but just while we're on the conversation, let's briefly just touch on, of course, everybody would love to know, because you're a family friend of the Haaland family. Mm-hmm. What do you make of Erling Haaland? I mean, he's just really an absolute sensation. I mean, I can't remember a player like that for really some years, right?
No, that's true. And he's from Norway, you know, small country with 5 million people. I think we can mention some other Norwegian famous names as Haaland, of course, who is his mentor and his agent. And you have also Ole Gunnar Solskjær, who trained him in Molde when he was there. Yeah. And at that point, yeah, he wasn't even almost recognized in Norway because he wasn't really, really breakthrough or what they call it. But at that point, he grew up some centimeters very quick. And then Molde did a very, very good thing. Don't train so hard, don't train so much. You have the body develop before you can adapt it to football and everything. So I think Molde and also Bryne, the club before that, where Haaland is from, mm-hmm, they did an amazing job to don't push him too hard, let him rest. Mm-hmm. And that's more important, because if you are good, you are on the way up, and they're just pushing on, pushing and pushing with training and with games and sort of things. Mm-hmm. Then you get injured. But he has never been injured. Mm-hmm. He has taken his steps by step by step by step, and he has a football pensum that he has been through all. And when I always say to Norwegian young players that, oh, they're looking to England, they're looking to Germany, they're looking to Holland, mm-hmm, they want to go out and be a professional player. Mm-hmm. And then my advice to them is that when you are too good for your team in Norway, then is the time. Because you need always to have somebody who is better than you to look up to train with, to have as a almost like a mentor in your own team. But it didn't went long before Erling Braut Haaland was too good for Molde. And then they did the right thing, sell him to a better club. But not to Borussia Dortmund, not to Real Madrid, but to Red Bull Salzburg in Austria. Mm-hmm. Because that was the correct step. And I think his father is very good at putting him in the right level of taking learning, because if he went to another big club, with even bigger players. Then he didn't have so much games to develop because the game is the most important thing to see if you develop the thing you train. So I think he really did the best steps a boy on that age with that physique could do. So and all many journalists call me and say, what do you think Erling should do now? Should he go to Real Madrid? Should he go to Manchester United or Dortmund? And I said, Dortmund, Borussia Dortmund, because they have the history of using young players, to have faith in them, to use them more than maybe Real Madrid and Manchester United. So it was a very good step, and he had really shown how good that was for him.
And of course, just for pronunciation reasons, you mentioned what we call Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Was the extraordinary, I never forget that 1999, as a Borussia Dortmund fan, I can never forget the 1999 Champions League final against Bayern Munich.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, and the celebration on that goal, he ruptured his knee again, and after that he almost didn't play football. Amazing. So I hope the celebration was worth it.
Absolutely. Well, it certainly was. Teddy Sheringham, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and I can't remember who scored the other goal, but I've met Dwight York as well, who was also a great footballer.
Yeah.
Now, we'll come back to Erling if I may, but thank you so much for those insights, which are really fascinating. And I know that you played with Erling's father. And interestingly, I believe that Erling was born here in the UK, if I'm not mistaken, but I never perceive him playing for the English national team, although I'm sure lots of people here would love to see that happen.
Yeah. I think he was born in I don't know if it was Leeds or Nottingham. Leeds?
Yeah, Leeds, yes.
Yeah. But I don't know if he had two passports, but he always played for Norway, yeah.
Absolutely, yes. I understand that. Just giving you your brief introduction. So you played for the Norwegian national team 63 times. And amongst your clubs are Rosenborg, which are the Bayern Munich or Borussia Dortmund of Norway, so the most successful team in Norwegian history. You played for Ajax Amsterdam in Holland and also for FC Copenhagen, which is, again, the two of the strongest teams in their respective countries. And you were 2002 Norwegian Footballer of the Year, which is quite an accomplishment in itself. And of course, you've won, I believe, six championships in total, and seven championships in total, and one Super Cup and three cups, three national cups, Danish Cup, Dutch Cup, and Norwegian Cup.
Yeah. It's, so, Andre, it sounds very big when you say it, because you never think of it as a football player before you talk about the history.
It's absolutely right. So, honestly speaking, your achievements are quite breathtaking as a football player. You must be the most decorated player that we've had interviewed before, and we've interviewed really great players like Delron Buckley and Niklas Jensen, as I mentioned before, but also the great, great Tony Woodcock. I don't know if you remember him. Yeah. Arsenal and Nottingham Forest striker. And I guess you would forgive me if I ask you the provocative question. As you know, I'm a journalist. What went wrong at Borussia Dortmund? How come André Bergdølmo didn't become the new Stefan Reuter or Matthias Sammer at the time? What is your feeling?
That's a little mixed feeling. I had two different years. You know, if you go a little bit back, when I was in Ajax, I had one more year of my contract. I played almost every game in Ajax. I took all the penalties. So, but in the end of 2003, before the summer, summer 2003, I played some not so good games, and in the training, I had Zlatan Ibrahimovic I had Jari Littmann, I had Van der Vaart, Wesley Snyder against me in the training every time. And that was unbelievable. When it would have 4 against 4, 5 against 5, I always get set up against the best players. And there is no excuse. I have a back injury since I was 19, and we didn't quite have control of it at that time. But to play 4 against 4 with those four people, it's unbelievable. Zlatan, on the pitch, on the training, he said to me when he came that in 4 years, I'm going to be the best striker in the world.
Did you believe him?
Yeah, really.
And
I believed him. And he maybe didn't go all the way up there about, you know, this trophy and stuff, but the way he impacted all the teams he had been through, Juventus, Barcelona, AC Milan, Inter, Barcelona, it's unbelievable. But I believed it. But in the training, when he came as I don't know if it was 18 or 19, he was from day one on the training, on pitch, unbelievable. But in the games, he struggled a little bit because it's different to have a session on the training pitch with your friends comparing to play against opponents from other teams, PSV, Feyenoord, Utrecht, Groningen, and so on. But so go back to where I started. So Koeman told me after a couple of trainings, I said, "Hey, Andre, what are you doing?" Because they were scoring goal, they were dribbling, they were passing through me. And I said, to be honest, I do my best. But these guys...
We're talking Ronald Koeman? Ronald Koeman, the new manager of Barcelona?
Yeah,
Ronald
Koeman? Yeah, Ronald Koeman, new manager of Barcelona.
We got another point to talk about there, because I would love to know what you think of him going to Barcelona, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, fantastic coach. He was everything with him was fantastic, and he was because Ajax brought me to Ajax quite as an old player. I was 28, I think. Maybe I was becoming 29 that year, and they did that because they had so much young players in the team, so they needed some experienced guy who has a good mentality, and I was helping the young players, and I helped them as much as I could, and I probably helped them too well, because after 3 years they say, "Andre, next year you don't gonna play so much," because a Finnish guy who came, he was 1920, Petri Pasanen, he said, "He's now better than you. But you're happy to stay here one more year, but you don't going to play so much." And then, I call my agent, and then he called Borussia Dortmund, because they had called him a couple of years before, because I was with Rosenborg when we beat them 3-0 in the UEFA Champions League.
Mm.
And at that time, that was in 99, and at that time they were leading the Bundesliga.
Mm.
And we were just a small club from Norway, and we beat them 3-0 in at that time the old stadium. Westfalen Stadium.
Would it be really fair to call Rosenborg, what, a 20 times Norwegian champions, a small club?
Yeah, compared to Dortmund, Borussia Dortmund, yes. Compared
to Norway,
FC, in Norway was the biggest club. We were better than the national team at that time.
Yeah.
But they had me on the, how do you say, on the block. So I was one of the guys who beat them in 99. The sports director of BVB, he had a good relationship with my agent. And yeah, it was just a phone call, and then it was down to Dortmund to look at the place. And this was a little bit hurry, because it had to be done that Wednesday before 12 o'clock in the evening, because they then gonna play the Champions League qualification. So you have to be signed before 12 o'clock. Amazing. So it goes really fast in football. So from lunch, Lunch in Ajax at 12 o'clock and then be signing at 10 o'clock in Dortmund the same day. So things happens.
10 p.m. at night time?
Yeah.
And you met with Michael Zorc?
Mm-hmm. So...
And you did the thing.
It's a little bit funny story because we have some other players who played in Germany, and my wife knows, of course, their wives from national team and so on. Yeah. So they say, Germany, not so good in English. How about the kids? And she wasn't so excited to go to Germany.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I'm now 32. Or I was, 32. But I said, this is a very, very good opportunity to get another contract, play in a fantastic stadium with a team that have a fantastic history. Mm. In 95, they were champions. No, 98, was it?
They were
Champions League.
They were certainly champions. 97 Champions League winners, yes.
Yeah, so I told my wife, and she said, no. I don't want to go to Germany. And then I used a little advantage of my agent because he has gone 7 years and he has a full educated how do you call it in English?
Psychologist.
So I said, now we have a work to do. You have to call my wife and tell her to drive down to
Dortmund,
yeah. And she said, no, I don't want to, but I can come and watch and to see how it is. But on the way down, we stopped in Bochum. I went out. I went to the medical test. She went to the hotel with my son. I went down with the doctor. The doctor went up together with all of us. And he said, it's okay, no problem. And my wife gave me these looks that, I'm going to kill you when I come home.
Yeah.
And she said, I have just one wish. Is there an English-speaking school here for our kids? And Mikael Sorg said, yeah, no problem. It's in Düsseldorf. Okay, if I can live in Düsseldorf, we go. So we went, signed that evening, went home on Thursday, went down on Friday, have a training session, and then I have my debut on Westfalen Stadium on Saturday against Wolfsburg.
So unbelievable.
It was fantastic.
Of course, I love to hear all the details as to any BVB fans, because our podcast is really about informing English fans about the great history of Borussia Dortmund. And it's such an honor to speak to people who've actually played for the club like yourself. And a really cool story as well. I one thing I would love to know is, I've never heard this. I speak fluent German myself, and Michael Zorc is pretty much the only guy I've never had the pleasure of meeting from the management of Borussia Dortmund. But can Michael Zorc speak English?
Yes.
Did he speak in English?
Yeah.
Oh, and he can speak well?
Yeah, well.
Oh.
Same, very well. He speak not fluid, but at the same level as me. So I hope you understand me, everybody.
Thank you, Andrew. Wow, so that's really cool. So you joined at a time when there were some key injuries to the team. As you mentioned, it needed to be pretty quick. And as you said, Ivar Nilsson, Metzelder, Torsten Frinks, they were all injured at the time. And you were playing under Matthias Sammer, who of course now is a technical consultant again after many years with Bayern München. Before we come to your debut versus Wolfsburg, what was it like working with Matthias Sammer? For me, I mean, he was the Ballon d'Or winner in, I think, 1997. And what an extraordinary footballer. He really led by example. I mean, he was, I was a defender myself, left defender like Niklas. And I always admire defenders because I know how hard it is to be a defender. And I really admire players players like Günther Kutowski and Matthias Sammer and so on, who are really, you know, people who give 125%. Jörg Heinrich also. So it's great to talk to another defender in yourself. And I guess, you know, for me, it's a real enrichment to hear about some of the guys you played against, like, for example, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than that. But let's talk about your first memories arriving there. What was Matthias Sammer like? I mean, Germans can be quite disciplinarian, can't they, frankly speaking?
Yeah, quite frankly speaking, that's you put the word in my mouth. Matthias Sammer, the first impression, because I, of course, knew who he was and who he and what he have achieved as a football player. But he was a little strange because I don't know if I don't think he could speak English. He never spoke English to me. I had German in school when I was a teenager. But that was only 2 years, and then I came to Holland. I learned Holland or Netherlands very quick, and then I had to change again over to German. And but he was, everything he talked about was in German. Compared to us with the Ajax, they are very. They're speaking English, everybody. So it some things was on Dutch, something was on English. If you didn't understand, was no problem. But they wanted you to learn Dutch. Here, only German. And I felt that that was a little bit quite all right. But I think it was some messengers messaging. How you say it?
There was a message that it's our way, how we do things.
Yes.
The German way.
Difficult for the French guys, the Brazilians, the Norwegian, the Danish, who didn't really to know everything. We learned the football language quite fast when you are coming to a club, but he was he was strange. He was strict. He was Ordnung must sein. Everything was like this. So. I have good memories of Matthias Sammer, and I have some very bad memories of Matthias Sammer. And not as a person, but as a coach.
Yeah, tough.
As a leader.
Tough.
Tough. But the way he was tough was like, I'm gonna take one example, and then it's a long time ago, of course, and maybe he has changed, but. I remember we was training on a Wednesday, and the last thing I did on that training was to try to tackle or to block a shot, and I was a little bit my big toe, it was going, so my knee was twisting a little bit. I didn't feel anything at that time. I went home to Düsseldorf, had dinner with my family, everything, waking up in the morning, and I was a little bit stiff in my knee, inside of my knee. Uh-huh. So the first thing I did was to call the physiotherapist in Dortmund, and I said, I feel it a little bit from the thing yesterday, so can you just check me before the training? Uh-huh. And in my head, I'm going to train. I can play, but... Uh-huh. But can just check me, and they said, yeah, come in around 12 o'clock, no problem. The training was at 4 that afternoon. I went in, and he was bending, and he was pushing, and he said, does this hurt? And I said, yeah, I can feel it. You have to go to the hospital, take an MRI, and you have to take all the scans and everything. I went up to the club doctor who was in Bochum, the same place where I have my fitness thing, and he said, it's a little bit with your on the inside of your knee. So he gave me a shot, and he said, now we go home, put your legs up high, and you're ready tomorrow. And I said, okay, but do you give the message to the coach, to Matthias Sammer, that I can't train? Yeah, I go down there now, and no problem. Just go home. You don't train today. Mm-hmm. I went home, come back tomorrow on Thursday, the day after, training at 10 o'clock. And when I come in, all the players said, thank you, Andre. Thank you. Thank you. So, thank you for what? Now you have a 2,000 euro in fine.
Oh.
Because I didn't tell the coach early enough that I couldn't train. But in my head, I just went there for a check and I will train. But the doctor sent me home. And I had to pay 2,000 euro in fine. And I said to Matthias, Stefan Reuter. Stefan Reuter, he was the how do you call it in English?
Captain.
The head of the fines, you know.
Okay, he was collecting.
He's collecting the fines from all the players. And I went to him and I said, this I don't going to pay. And then he didn't say anything. And I went out for training. No problems. The day after, no problems. On Saturday, I think we played against Leverkusen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing a very good game. Mm-hmm. And on Sunday, on the training, then Matthias Sammer came in and he said, Andre, about the fine. I understand that was a mistake for me because it was a misunderstanding. So you only have to pay 1,000 euro.
Oh, wow.
And I went to Stefan Reuter again. I said, this is not correct. This is unfair. I was one of the best games. I was one of the best players at the game against Leverkusen. And he said he was wrong because of the communication with the doctor. So I don't going to pay this. And he went into the trainer, said this. And on Monday on the training, he said, okay, everybody who has fines that didn't pay, you have to pay it before 4 o'clock today. If not, I double it again. And that's for me. It's not, I learned a lot of coaches and trainers up through my career. And most of the things I learned is this is not the way you behave with your players.
Absolutely.
But that's just a quick story about ups and downs, and it's not everything who it seems that everything is good and they must have the beautiful life and everything. It's everyday work like everybody else, and it's complicated. It's conflicts, and you have to work.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, Andre, you've certainly achieved a lot in your career, as I mentioned before, and with some great football clubs. And so, you've seen also as in your own experience as a trainer as well, what works and what doesn't work. Defense of Matthias Sammer, he did win the Deutsche Meisterschaft, the Bundesliga title in 2002 with Borussia Dortmund as a coach. So I guess some of his coaching techniques must have been successful, but indeed, you were joining essentially a team that was very strong. I guess the question mark is why Matthias Sammer left, and why Bert van Marwijk came. I mean, I guess that's something which you can shed some light on.
Yeah, I really don't
maybe
know
you have already.
because the first year we ended up like seventh place or sixth place or something.
Sixth place, yeah.
And compares to the years before, maybe that wasn't good enough for the board or for the leaders or whatever. But when the good thing to have a coach as Matthias Sammer, Ronald Koeman, all the great players in Europe or in the world, is when they come on the pitch when you are doing something and they just, hey, if you do this and you do this, then it will be all right. And as a player, it's easy to do, but you need somebody to tell you to do it correctly. And if you if you have Matthias Sammer, he came to me and said, hey, if you go a little bit left, you can achieve what you want. Ah, thank you. Nobody learned me that. But when you are a player at Dortmund or Ajax or in Manchester United, whatever, it's easier to learn people the right thing because they do it. And that's the same little digression. That's the same when you ask Guardiola, what's the secret about your success? And that's the easiest answer. He said, that's easy. Good players.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. And
amazing
player.
So he had some, when it comes to you one against one, and he tells you certain small things that you catch it right away. That's unbelievable experience to learn from. So he is a good coach, no doubt about that. But I think it was many things that, you know, injured players financially and the fans and the supporters. I don't know, but I think we had a summer break when we heard that he was sacked. And before the summer was over, we heard that Bert van Marwijk was coming in. So,
yeah,
that's football.
And I guess André Bergdolmo had some small laugh to hear that finally the but yeah, moving on, and he could take his money with him.
Yeah, yeah. That wasn't a big problem. That was just a fun story. That everything in a big club, also as Borussia Dortmund, isn't that beautiful after all. But when I see back to the memories, you know, I didn't mention that. But you know, when you go out on your first, I played for 53,000 in Ajax. I played in Real Madrid, in Barcelona for full, you know, but when you come home to a home, you put on a yellow shirt and you are in the first team after 2 days, you go out and it's 83,500 people. Yeah. It's one of the moments in my career that if I have to think about one thing, is that two first minute when we go out on the stadium, you know, the yellow wall is standing there, 27,000. It's unbelievable. So I'm so happy to experience that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've had the pleasure of walking down those steps and then down the player tunnel with that music, with that that music, that rock music that they play. I think Van Halen track, and then you come out there, and then suddenly you're surrounded by these walls of concrete all around you. And obviously, I've never been in there when, you know, as a player, but just as doing that stadium tour and so on. And it's really, really, absolutely amazing, as you say.
Yeah.
So you walk down there, and you're playing with guys like Eva Nilsson, Metzelda, Torsten Frinks. Torsten Frinks, I met him about 2 years ago, and he's now the coach of Meppen in the second league. He's the coach of Meppen.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's just taken over recently. And tell me what was your first impression of people like the guys I mentioned, Christoph Metzelder and so on, and Eva Nilsson? And yeah, I've heard often that from that period when we interviewed Delron Buckley, and the Brazilians kind of had a little group of friends there. They were very close and so on. And certainly Dede made an extraordinary impact in Borussia Dortmund. I mean, quite a remarkable guy. But what was your first kind of impressions then of the guys there who were playing at that time? I know it was a difficult time at Borussia, but certainly it was also one where there was certainly in your first season very high quality players, like one of my favorite players, Stefan Reuter, who had played for Juventus, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. It was a little bit mixed, as you said. You had the Brazilian, you had a little bit of the French guys, you had me and Niklas from the north. But Metzelder, I didn't really get to see him play because he had this injury after the was the World Cup in 2002, or I don't know. He had some problems. He had several surgery. Evan Nielsen, he was a fantastic player, but I think he also took his knee.
And yeah, right.
Same with Frings, Sammy Frings. Frings comes back and played some games, and you saw he wasn't really, really super fit.
Yeah,
the way he played, it was. I was just thinking, oh, give this guy 8-9 months with really good training and matches, and of course it was quality players. The guys who I played with was Everton was fantastic. Amoroso, I think he was on his way out, on his way in, he couldn't find it. And Stefan Reuter, he was more, I think, on the end of his career, but as a player, as a in the dressing room, on the pitch, he was the boss, and he controlled everything. But I remember when I had some few other podcasts, and everybody said, who did you like most?
Perfect.
And when I saw Rosicky played,
Tommy Rosicky, yeah, fantastic. Yeah, Rosicky, yeah, came to Arsenal.
Unbelievable sight for the game. You know, he wasn't big, he wasn't strong, he wasn't good on his head, but even I remember one of the first Dutch word I learned is Arschraus. Is it that? You know, when you have to protect the ball, and the little guy, he never.
I don't speak Dutch, unfortunately, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. So when you have a man in your back, and shouting Arsch raus, and then you bend a little bit, and then
man on in England, man on,
yeah, man on, or man on, we say Hintermann in German also,
yeah.
But he was just fantastic, and he had a good season. I don't remember if he went to Arsenal the second year or after I left, but one of the most, one of those who surprised me most was Jan Koller. I knew
2 meters tall, no, 1.95 meters or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. He was way bigger than me. And of course, when we had the set pieces training before the game, who's going to mark him? Yeah, Andre. There was no chance in the world. I was trying to push, I was trying to block, I was trying to kick him. No. He just headed the ball in. It was unbelievable. But that surprised me most was that he was so good on his feet. He was so good to read the game. He was, you know, the touch, the layoff when he was a target man. It was a ball coming up with full speed. He just poof, poof, put it down. So he really surprised me how good footballer he was. He wasn't just big target man who can head the ball. He was also a very good footballer. So and of course there he was the boss, just on the in the dressing room, and also in the pitch. So very, very good guys, and everybody from different different language, but still, you know, when you come into the dressing room, we are the same.
That's definitely a question I would love to ask you. Thank you for sharing that. You give some amazing insights into the different characters and also the way that things were done and so on. And obviously, Stefan Reuter has gone on to be the coach of Augsburg. I'm sure you'll have followed him.
Mm.
And he has in his own right as a coach a successful career, and indeed, of course, was a great German international player. I guess I wonder what language you guys used to speak amongst each other. English, I guess.
Yeah, English, and German. Of course, we tried to speak German. It was not a problem, but when I came from Norway to
Ajax,
it was English Holland, English Holland. So if I didn't understand, it was English. But after 3 years in Holland, I learned the language, went to Germany, and then I didn't think German English. I was thinking German Holland.
Dutch,
of course. Yeah. So the first year in Germany, I became even better in Dutch than I was when I was in Ajax.
Holland. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was quite nice the second year when Bart van Marwijk came with his team, because then I spoke fluently Dutch, and that helped me. I think that helped me a lot. But everybody spoke English mostly, not all the players. But then it was English, so English or German. It was mostly in the dressing room. But the coach was speaking German, Matthias Sammer.
Yes.
And when Bert van Marwijk came, he started in English.
Yes.
And then they went over to
German.
Yeah, Germans afterwards. Everything you miss when you stop playing football at any level, but I was so fortunate to play at the top level. But the day you stop playing football and you know that, okay, you stop now, you're retired, you have to do something else. The only thing you miss is that feeling that you're talking about now. It's the dressing room, it's the community, it's all together, and everything is about one thing, winning.
100%.
And it's nothing better to wake up in the morning, as you said, eat a good breakfast, have a good lunch, take a walk, come to the stadium. It's late in the night. The lights are on. You hear the fans, and you go out there and you do a good performance and you win together. There's nothing more in my life that I can compare to that. Nothing.
Yeah.
But also, if you do the same thing and you lose, or you personally had done something to prevent the loss or the win, it's like hell and heaven. It's so big difference. But everybody on this level are just searching for the heaven. But sometimes you go down there, and one of my experience was, of course, as you mentioned, the Champions League qualification against Brugge.
Yeah, absolutely.
With a Norwegian coach who trained me in Rosenborg in 1998. He was assistant in 1999.
Yeah, you had a very, very good career at Rosenborg. Quite remarkable. Four championships.
Yeah, and we went to Belgium first leg, and it was 0-0. And everything after in the dressing room, all the guys on my team said, no worries, we take them at home. No worries. Because we were a better team than these guys. We didn't score, but we're going to win.
Yeah. So
going to the Champions League.
That black
okay. Second leg, 0-0. Penalty shootout. And Mikael Sork came to me and said, Andre, you scored on all your penalties in Ajax.
Yeah.
Do you take a penalty today?
Yeah.
And I said, of course. I was a little bit high on myself because I was so sure, because I scored, I think maybe it was 9 goals in Ajax on penalties, didn't miss one. I was so confident.
Yeah.
But I was too confident. So when I went up for the penalty, Amoroso was taking the first. Mm-hmm. He missed. Bruce, the score, and I was the second. And the only thing I was thinking about is, okay, after a score, how do I celebrate? And then you never do that, because then you have your mind on something else than just a penalty. And that's where I did my big mistake. I was thinking about what's going to happen when after I score. So I put the goal. It was not a good penalty. He went the right way and he saved it. So that feeling is one of the worst I had. And you know, when going to the dressing room after the game, you stand up and say, "Guys, I'm sorry." And then everybody takes around you and say, "Yeah, but it was a team effort. You were not the only one who missed, and we didn't score. So no worries. Fantastic group." But you know, when you come home, you are a little bit down, and you went to the internet, and one of the biggest Norwegian newspaper had a headline that said, "Penalty miss for 15 million euros."
Incredible.
It does do something with you, but then you have to think, what's happened now? But you have to just go on.
It would be very easy to focus on the negatives, because the time in Borussia Dortmund was a time of financial difficulties of the club. Matteo Amoroso was leaving the club, and he was the keen striker. Matthias Sammer was going, and he had won the title with them only a couple of years before. And so, of course, it was a very mixed time. And everybody we spoke to, well, I spoke to indeed about on this show, I normally interview with a panel of fans. We like to give other people the chance. They always express, people like Delron Buckley, that it was a very tough time to be working playing at a club like Borussia Dortmund, because of the complications behind the scenes and so on. And it's well known that Amoroso was having a lot of arguments with the club about payments of various different things and other things. And of course, the 15th of March 2005, I guess, is a day which nobody will ever forget, which was the day when Borussia Dortmund management had to go to Düsseldorf to the meeting to try to resolve the finances of the club. Was it something which the players were aware of that was going on behind the scenes, the financial difficulties, and did you find out that they had managed to secure a deal? I believe that they managed to do a deal on the stadium with an American bank. I think it was Morgan Stanley in the end, and managed to secure the finances of the club and the survival of the football club. But obviously, at that time, the fans must have been very freaked out, because I've been following Dortmund since 1982, and I remember them. I remember in the 1980s when they were close to going to the second division, and I remember being part of the protests underneath the Südtribüne of the fans, and I remember chanting that we wanted the management to leave, and the ups and downs that we now see at Schalke, we actually have seen, you know, in Borussia Dortmund, especially around about the time when you were there. So was that... I guess my first question is, and we should come back to the Bruges question, but I've seen Bruges play many times against Dortmund, and they are never easy to beat. Never, never, never. It's a really tough, tough team, actually. And we saw that this week with Royal Antwerp when they beat Tottenham Hotspurs. I mean, the Belgian teams are no joke, basically. And that's why Belgium is right now the highest ranked national team in the world. So, were you guys as players, were you aware that there was a lot of financial problems going on at the time during your second season under Bert van Marwijk?
Yeah, they come and they informed us about the stuff, but they tried also to not tell us so much about how the situation was. Remember, I didn't have one delay of any salary or whatsoever. So I think we was living a little bit out of that information as a player. We knew about it, but how deeply it really was in the club, I can't really recall how much we knew. But I remember when they came and they say, now we have sold it. And I think some of the players said, sold what? So I don't think everybody was so informed about how the situation really was.
Was there any sense of, as they say in German, Erleichterung, like a feeling of lightness, like a happiness, a celebration within the club? I guess this is the time when Aki Watzke, one of my personal heroes, I'm actually translating his book into English, his biography at the moment. And did you meet, I presume you must have met Aki Watzke at that time. I think he just joined in 2005.
I think so.
As a character.
But I remember it was more like, yes, and now we are going to inform you that everything is okay. More than that, that came every week to say that now we have a situation which is very, very difficult, because I think they knew that we knew. But the information about exactly how the situation was, I can't recall that we had that much information. We read about it in the newspaper, but, you know, to read German when you don't speak it really well, it's more like you see on Norwegian TV and you go home and you stay with your family and you get your salary. But I remember when they came in and say that, okay, now we are saved at this time. So, and was it the year after they sold the name of the stadium or what?
Signal Iduna Park,
exactly. Yeah.
And the fans can never really get over that for the fans.
No, I know. It will always be Westfalenstadion for the players, for the supporters.
For the fans. Yeah, absolutely. And it's the first thing when guys come and join our fan club. We have 200 members of the London fan club, which is a big fan club for Borussia Dortmund outside of Germany. Yeah, and one of the first things we always say is don't call it Signal Iduna Park. And then the second thing we say, which won't surprise you, is it's not Schalke, it's Gelsenkirchen or Herrenfeld. So do you have any – we just played the derby this weekend and we won 3-0. Yeah, I guess Bundesliga is being shown a fair bit in Norway. Do you have good memories of playing in the derby against Schalke? I have to say that my actual question I was going to ask you was about how good Bruges are. But let's move on to Schalke because that's the most amazing derby. And now I've said the S word. I should never have said that.
No, Gelsenkirchen. Gelsenkirchen.
Yeah.
I can remember. When I'm thinking back of the games, it's the home games against Schalke, it's the home games against Bochum, it's a home games against Bayern, it's a home games against Hertha Berlin, who you know, the atmosphere is just extraordinary. And I remember when I came, my debut was against Wolfsburg, as I told you earlier. At that time, they already played the first game in the league, and that was the weekend before, and that was away game against Schalke. No, it was a away game against Gelsenkirchen.
All right.
And it ended 2-2.
Yeah.
And that was at that time, not good enough. So it means a lot to beat those, you know. You have that in all the countries in Europe or in the world, you know. You have Everton, Liverpool, you have Celtic, Glasgow, you have all over the world. So the biggest one was against Schalke, and that you cannot lose. We don't care how you play, but you have to win.
Yeah.
So that's the feeling you have, and you feel it also on the stand. You know, we don't care if you lose a pass, but just win the ball and score. We're going to win. Fancy, just win it.
Is it like that, Andre, when you played in the stadium in Gelsenkirchen? I mean, is it a very hostile environment for a BVB player to be playing?
No, I can't to really think that I can recall that it was unpleasant to play there. You just felt that most of the stands are against you, but I never felt it like that, if that's what you mean.
You played in an era in the Bundesliga with some outstanding players. I asked Jörg Heinrich when I interviewed him the same question. Do you remember Jörg Heinrich, I guess?
Mm, mm.
Yeah, a real gentleman. I did a special series on the 1997, and you'll be interested to hear. I interviewed Steinar Pedersen, the Norwegian player. Yeah.
Mm.
Who's now a coach in Norway. I think his club is Start. And he was then, he played for one season for Borussia Dortmund as a sort of squad player. He didn't really have a huge breakthrough with them. But I interviewed him, Martin Krey, and Jörg Heinrich together.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool. It was like a special series for 20 years of the 1997 Champions League winners.
Oh, okay.
And who was your worst competitor? Because you were playing at that time in a league with guys like Miroslav Klose, Roy Mackay, Michael Ballack, and many, many more. I think in your first season, Bayern Munich won the title, and Dortmund got beaten 5-0 at Bayern. And I remember Roy Mackay scored quite a dodgy little goal. I don't know if you remember it in that 5-0. And then when Bayern came back to Dortmund, the score was 2-2, which was basically a big achievement. I mean, any points against Bayern is always very satisfying, especially a win. Who was your worst opponent played against in the Bundesliga in your two seasons in the Bundesliga? And also, which game was particularly memorable for you?
I recall, if I'm not wrong, that we won. I don't know if it was the first year or the second year we beat Bayern 2-0 at home.
Yeah,
I think so. And that was against Roy Mackay and Ballack. Now Ballack was in Leverkusen, maybe. But Roy Mackay, he was absolutely one of the best players. And you know, when you don't get any goals against you when he plays and you win the game, it's one of the games I can remember very well. And also, of course, my first against Wolfsburg. I can't even remember any name on Wolfsburg that time, but just the feeling when you the first game and you win 2-0, it was unbelievable. But I spoke to some players here in Norway, and they say, yeah, we are playing in the cup and we're going to meet a third division team, but we're going to win 10-0. So okay, because I remember we played I think it was the first round in the cup in Dortmund. We played against maybe second division, third division, I cannot remember. I think we won 1-0. And this was really fit players. You were 20, 21, 23. You know, there are 80 million people in Germany. Of course, the third division league is good. And they were really good. And I said, wow, this is third division. And I felt it like we played against a Bundesliga team.
Yeah.
They were running. They were
Germany, right?
Yeah, in Germany, yeah. It was unbelievable.
Germany, yeah.
And I was thinking, I'm so lucky because some of these players on the third division team is even better than me, but they don't have a chance because they buy somebody from Ajax, they buy somebody from Nottingham Forest, they buy some from Manchester United, like me and Niklas Jensen. I really seriously mean that there were better players on that third division team than me at that time.
Do you think, I mean, certainly here in the UK, in the English and the Premier League, and I can't help, by the way, to mention that you had an offer from Portsmouth FC, and that's my local team where I live in Portsmouth.
Yeah, that's correct.
Portsmouth, but I remember in the newspaper you said, I like to stay with a club which is in the top five. Why should I go to Portsmouth, newly promoted?
Oh, did I say that? Nah, I really can't remember that one, but I remember it was I think who was the manager? It was
I'm thinking Harry Redknapp.
Yes,
Harry Redknapp. Yeah.
It was.
And you turned down the Premier League. Surely that's every Norwegian's dream to play against Liverpool, Manchester United.
Yeah. But I never turned him down because my agent, I remember, he had spoken to Harry Redknapp, and the contract was already done. And I remember that I had a phone call from the UK when I was in a day off with my family on the beach in Holland. And it was an English number, and I take him. And that was, if I recall, the agent from the boardman, how do you say it? The chief
of the board. Yeah. With FC.
And he said, hey, Andre, this contract makes you one of the best paid player in Portsmouth. And that's not correct because you're not the striker. And then I said, no comment on this one. You have to take it up with my agent.
Nice.
And after that, I didn't hear anything.
Yeah.
And then he came to me and said, okay, we go to Dortmund. So I never turned Portsmouth down. It would be my wife always want to go to England because everybody in Norway, we are having games every Saturday to see English games. My favorite club in England is Liverpool, and to play against them, that would be a nice thing. But so I never turned them down anyway. And if I had that comment, maybe, but I can't recall it.
Yeah, and so you're still following Liverpool on TV, Jurgen Klopp and so on, who later came as coach.
Yeah.
And have you been to watch a game here in England in the Premier League ever?
Not as a spectator, but I was driving around with broadcast TV here in Norway, who sended the Champions League games. So I've been to Old Trafford, I've been to Anfield Road, I've been to Highbury. So, but that is from a professional side, you know, as a commentator, as a side expert commentator. Yeah.
That's right. Yes. Let's move on to, because I'm mindful of the time and we've run over slightly, for which I apologize, but it's been most absolutely fantastic talking to you because you have such great insights and you're really expressing what it's like to be a coach. On the one side, you're really explaining how you get to teach the players, how they improve season by season, month by month, and also a fascinating insight there about how the young players are basically not getting a chance in their own country so much because of foreign players coming in. And I was mentioning the Premier League because in England, 35% of English guys get a chance to play at the highest level. In Germany, it's more like, I think it's somewhere in the region of 50% or 45% or somewhere around that region are German-born players who are playing in the German league, Bundesliga. Yeah. But and I noticed that in Norway, I was looking through some of the teams that you've been a coach for. Some of them are about 80% Norwegian players, which surely is very good for the Norwegian national team. Before we get onto the national team, tell me briefly. I always wanted to ask this question. I've never got around to it. Michael Zorc. Does he get involved a lot with the players, with the cabin, with the changing room, with the decisions on the bench, which players come on and off and stuff like that? Or is he more like a business guy in the background?
As I remember, he was more like a businessman in the background. He listened to the guys. You can go to him if there was anything.
Yeah.
I remember one thing from the first year with Matthias Sammer. That I remember we came in, okay, we're training at 10 o'clock on Monday.
Yeah.
The first thing he said that, okay, tomorrow we train at 10 o'clock. Okay. I went the next day, and then the first thing he said, tomorrow we train at 4 o'clock.
Again, 10 and 4, twice in the same...
Yeah. No, no, no. The next day. The next day. So he started every training to say, tomorrow we're going to train at 4. And we came in the 4 the day after, and then they said the first thing in the training, he said, tomorrow we train at 12. So you couldn't plan everything. I couldn't plan to take my kid to the dentist because I never knew from day to day what time I was training.
Yeah.
So I went into Mikhail Sork and I said, listen, I spoke to many of the guys here and they think this is a little bit disturbance during the plan of the week during football, family, things to do.
Marwijk, Andre, who was doing Robert van Marwijk?
No, Matthias Sammer.
Matthias Sammer. So he was really a control freak, definitely.
Yeah. So he just felt it. How are the players doing? Are they tired? Do they need some hours extra before the next training? So he said, tomorrow we train at 4 o'clock. Today we train 10. Tomorrow we train, 12 o'clock. So you never, I couldn't tell my wife, can we go to the zoo with the kids at 12 o'clock on Friday? I said, I don't know, because I don't never know when to train. So I went into to Mikhail Sork and I said, Mikhail, listen, I think it will be better for all the whole squad to have a week plan or 2 weeks plan. So because then everybody on the wife, the kids are happy, you are happy, we are happy. And I think when everybody's happy, we manage to do better trainings. And 2 days later, it was a plan coming up in the dressing room, 14 days planned, all the trainings, 10, 4, 10, 4, yeah. And the people say, hey, how did you do that? It wasn't so much, I just asked and I tell them, you know, I was 32 years old, I was growing up, I was experienced, and I said,
But the
German guys, okay, this is how it is in Germany. And I said, this is not good enough. So they say, hey, how did you do that? No, I just ask, and I tell them my story of how I felt and how many of you felt. And then, poof, 14 days plan was hanging on the wall the rest of the year.
Amazing, amazing. So Michael Zork is the boss at Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah, for me, he is the boss, and he's been, and he knows football, he knows the club, he knows how to make contracts. I think Mikhail Sork has been a very good guy for Dortmund up through the years.
I never had a chance to meet him. It would be a great honor to meet him. I've met Dr. Raubal a few times at the annual general meeting, and also Sebastian Kehl, who will be soon the new Michael Zork, the new sporting director. What would you expect from Sebastian Kehl as sporting director? A great captain to the club and a great personality, I think, too, no? And the answer that I would love to just know a little bit about your career with the Norwegian national team, because you had some extraordinary experiences there.
That you don't have the answer to that, but as a player and as a colleague, he was fantastic. He took care of everybody. He spoke English to everybody. He such a young age. As he was also already there. How old was he when I was there? How old is he now? He's, I think, maybe he was 21, 22 or something when I was there.
Yeah.
Still, he had an impact on the dressing room. He is a fantastic person.
He's 40 now. So you
40
were,
now, yeah.
You were playing together. I guess he was 20.
23, 24. Yeah. So, and he had an amazing career, and I'm not worried that he should take that seat in Dortmund. He's a fantastic person. And I think if you want to be good at something, doesn't matter if it's football or if it's a doctor or if it's a lawyer, you have to be a good person.
Yeah.
And that's no matter what professional you're doing, if you have to stay there over a while, as I said, I spoke to many other podcasters and I said, I don't know any football player who has been on the highest level over a period of time in the same club who is not a good person.
Absolutely.
You have some people, some strikers maybe, I don't want to mention any names. No, he is fantastic. Because you see how impact he has on every team he plays for. But you have some players that are so good that scores 15 goals every year.
Yeah.
And it's always some clubs who needs a guy who scores 15 goals.
Yeah.
But he won't stay there for long because the club doesn't really need a guy like that. Again, I don't want to mention name, but if you're going to stay in a club for a period of time and have a good relationship, you need to be a very good person. And that's compared to all the professionals in every branch in the world. So I think Sebastian Kehl will do excellent job for BVB.
That's really good to hear. That's remarkable. And certainly he comes across very well. It's known that he does a lot of different works with different charities, helping trafficked women from different countries. He's doing a lot to raise money for good causes. And as you say, many of the good players have their charities which they support. I was involved in organizing. I would love to, especially the insights about Sebastian Kehl, but also the insights about Zama and also the amazing stories about Zlatan, who clearly is one of the greatest footballers, certainly one of the greatest strikers in European football history. And what an amazing thing for you that you've played with such great players in your career. Wesley Sneijder, you've been coached by Ronald Koeman, who's now at Borussia at Barcelona, and you played in the Dutch league and so on. What I get a sense of talking to you is that you have a bit of a regret that you didn't get to play in England in the Premier League.
Yeah, actually, I had an offer also before I went to Ajax to go to Derby.
Derby County.
Jim Smith.
Jim Smith, classic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But then after a very 2-3 very good season in Rosenborg, we were ready for the Euro in 2000. And then I remember Ajax was mentioned, Derby was mentioned, Derby County, Valencia was mentioned. And I have a stepson whose father is in Norway, who is actually a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
We have became good friends. When Ajax came and we had a talk with them before the Euro 2000, because they said, we want to buy you now because if you do a really good European Championship, then somebody else comes and then you will be much more expensive. So we said, we write a contract now, a personal contract, but it depends that we can be agree with your club Rosenborg. And I said, yes, okay. And then just a couple of days later, Valencia came on and they offer more to me and also more to Rosenborg.
Did you fancy playing in La Liga against Real Madrid and Barcelona and clubs like that?
Yes, but the one thing here is that I had an 8-year-old stepson who really needs to go home to his father.
Yeah.
And it's much, much easier to take a direct flight from Schiphol, Amsterdam to Oslo.
Yeah.
It's one hour and 20 minutes. Compared to go to Valencia, you have to go to Madrid, you have to go to Frankfurt, you have to go to Oslo. So I said, no, I go to Ajax.
Yes.
Because that's easier for my stepson to see his father.
But I can't imagine how cool it must be for your stepson, you have another son, I think, as well. Is it right? No.
Yeah, we have, my wife and me has one together, and she had the one before when I met her. Yeah.
But how is it for the boys looking up to their father and stepdad, who is a football, when you were a football player? I mean, I saw a great picture of little Erling with his dad and wearing a Manchester City shirt. And it must be pretty cool for the boys to look up to their dad when he's a football player, right?
Yeah, it is. But you know, still they're living with me their whole lives, and they know I play football. But their career is something totally different. My stepson is a policeman.
Yeah.
And our son is a professional dancer.
Dancer?
So he dancing at the opera here in Norway. He's been to Belgium, he's been to England, and he has been living of his work since he was 19. And he sometimes tell me, "Dad, are you really happy that I'm a dancer and not a football player?"
Yeah.
And I said, because if I pushed you into football, you would drop out when you were 17.
Got you.
Because he had his heart really for dancing.
For music.
We saw it for music and dancing. And we saw it already when he was 9, 10 years old. We put him into football, of course, but he was not interested. And then we introduced him for dancing and for other sports. But it was dancing that really was him. And then he went on to follow his heart. And now he's one of the best dancers in Norway.
Congratulations, Andre. And congratulations on your amazing career. Tell me just very briefly about the highlights for Norwegian national team. And please forgive me, it went over. But I'm sure you'll understand my enthusiasm to talk to such a player like And I never even had the chance to talk about all your championships with Copenhagen, with Ajax and Rosenborg, which already in themselves, again, would merit a podcast.
We can hook up another day, no problems. But regarding to the national team Norway, we said now in Norway for 20 years that we have to do some developing of young players to play a little bit more like the rest of the world. We call it modern football and retro football. We always play retro in Norway. You know, with Drillo, we were ranked number 2 in 1997, 1998. We played only long balls. We had Jostein Flo, who played in Sheffield United. We played different. But now, the last 20 years, we have done a lot of good work in Norway, and we created players like Haaland, who plays now in BVB, of course, who is, for me at the moment, one of the absolute best striker in the whole world. We have Martin Ødegaard in Real Madrid. We have Sander Berge in Sheffield United, who is a really big talent. We have Sørloth. So I think in 3, 4, 5 years now, we will say something to the rest of the Europe that here comes Norway.
And Erling Haaland for the national team, 2000 European Championships, the best. That was the highlight for you?
Yeah.
I can believe it. Thank you so much, Andre. My goodness, what an amazing conversation. Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much. Well,
you're very welcome.
Thank you. If the fans would love to get in touch with you to send you some comments or memories from your career, so many amazing games, many of which I didn't have the chance to mention, or also just to ask you perhaps about training tips or advice about becoming a professional footballer, which is most of the fans' dream, the young fans' dream, how can they reach you? Can they send you any Twitter, via Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, or what's the best
way to
reach you?
I am on Instagram, but not so very effective. But Twitter, I'm quite on. So it's at Andre Bergdolmo. My name straight out.
At Andre Bergdolmo. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, that was episode 16 of the Borussia Dortmund Fan Club podcast with André Bergdolmo. And thank you so much again, André. I really appreciate your time and the incredible insights. And as I said, the Ruhrnachricht newspaper will most likely be picking up on some of the stories and insights that you shared with me today. So it's a double whammy for you and a great pleasure for us as English fans of Borussia Dortmund. And I wish you great success with your team as a coach as well. And I'll pass on your regards to Niklas. And also, I guess you probably speak to him more than I do, in fact. But just finally, Dennis Gentenaar. I don't know if you remember him. He was the goalkeeper of Ajax few years after you. He mentioned to say hi to you because he has a shirt from you when you played at FC Copenhagen. And it's a collection of shirts.
I remember, and we beat him out of the Champions League qualification.
It's a really small world, isn't it, the football world?
Yeah, it is. It is.
André, God bless you and have a great weekend.
Thank you very much. The same to you. Bye-bye.
Borussia Dortmund, du bist unser Leben.